morning we talked about the idea of contentment, and what we really emphasized, I think, was the attitude that we ought to have about our possessions and blessings. And certainly, without that proper thinking about God's blessings and how we use them and that kind of thing, we'll never reach that thing called contentment. But there's also the practical side of contentment. The kind of sermon I preach this morning, everybody always agrees with. Oh, yeah, great sermon. I ought to be more thankful. I ought to be more grateful and that kind of thing. And that's true. Most of us probably need a dose of that. But the practical side is something like this. So if I'm content, can I get a new couch? Or if I'm content, can I get a new car or a bigger TV or a sweater or something like that? That's the practical side. And can we distinguish between wants and needs? Is that legitimate? Can I buy something only if I need it? Or can I have something just because, ooh, it's shiny and I like it? Is that perfectly legitimate? If I buy that lovely red sweater, if I buy that shiny new tool at Home Depot, am I still being content? And I think that's where sometimes the trouble comes for us. I want us to think tonight about this idea of contentment as it relates to the practical side of things, the purchases that we make and the things that we want and the things that we need. I think sometimes when we are confronted with the biblical teachings on contentment, if you're not careful, you can go to a couple of extremes. Some people take the idea that, well, that means I can never ever want or desire anything. I can never want that nice new thing. I shouldn't even desire that kind of thing. It's all about absolute bare necessities. Well, that's one extreme. The other extreme is to say, well, you know, desire is just part of human nature, and so we turn ourselves over to every conceivable desire. And there is no limit to the things that we are willing to purchase and acquire. I think both of those are wrongful desires, and that can get us out of balance in our thinking. So I want us to talk tonight about finding the balance in relationship to contentment. What is the happy medium? What is that middle point where we recognize our desires, but we control them? We recognize the difference between wants and needs, and we're comfortable with that, and we're making the proper use of the resources that the Lord has given to us. I want to start out by talking about Aristotle. Aristotle had a concept. Aristotle, of course, was a philosopher, and like a lot of Greeks, he wrote about things called virtues and morality and ethics. And when Aristotle was probably the first one to really do this, he talked about virtue as being what he called the golden mean. The golden mean is virtue is sort of the median point, the middle point between opposite extremes. If you want to find the virtuous thing, if you want to do the virtuous thing, find that middle ground. Now, he articulated this in probably his most important work called Nicomachean Ethics. Nicomachean Ethics was a 10-volume work on the subject of ethics. And he articulated this idea of the golden mean. I want to show you how he presented it. This list of virtues is taken straight out of Nicomachean Ethics. In the middle, you have virtuous things. You have bravery, temperance, generosity, magnanimity, gentleness, friendliness, truthfulness, wittiness. Each one of those is the medium point, the middle point between opposite extremes. For example, bravery is the middle point between excess bravery, which means you go out and do reckless, foolish things, on the one hand, and a lack or a deficiency of bravery, which is cowardice. Temperance, now, how the words are listed here sounds a little bit backwards, but he viewed temperance as the proper desire for pleasure, and too much pleasure led to dissipation, that is excess. Temperance, and lack of temperance led to insensibility, simply not desiring anything, not enjoying anything. Generosity was the middle point between wastefulness, excess, on the one hand, and stinginess, on the other hand, too little generosity. Magnanimity was the halfway point between smallness of soul and vanity. You either think way too much of yourself or you don't think enough of yourself. Gentleness this is one of the words for meekness in the New Testament. That was the halfway point between too little spirit and too much spirit. You could be terribly irritable or you could be spiritless. Friendliness was the halfway point between quarrelsomeness and a flatterer. Truthfulness, was, I like this one. Truthfulness was the median between boastfulness, you're constantly telling too much of the truth about yourself or exaggerating things on the one hand, and then the lack of it was self-deprecation. You're always putting yourself down. Somewhere in the middle is truthfulness. And the last one, wittiness. You can be so witty that you become a buffoon. You just become a joke to everyone because you're constantly being silly. And then the opposite point of that is you're boorish. You don't enjoy anything. You don't laugh at anything. And so I like how he presented the concept of ethics. Well, when it comes to contentment, I want us to use this concept because I think, for me anyway, it provides a very helpful gauge of figuring out whether I actually am being content or not. And it actually helps me when it comes to the practical side of making decisions about finances and purchases and wants and needs and that kind of thing. I want us to think about contentment being the middle ground between too much desire and too little desire. And it seems to me that's what really contentment is about. It's keeping our desires in check, keeping them in the proper balance. If you have too much desire, that's going to lead you in one direction. If you don't have enough desire, that can potentially lead you in a different direction. And I want to start just by exploring that. What happens when our contentment is just completely out of balance? For example, what happens when we have too much desire? I think it leads to things like covetousness and greed and worry and trust in material things. Let's look at several passages that talk about this. Colossians chapter 3, for instance. Colossians chapter 3, in verse 5, "Put to death, therefore, what is earthly in you, sexual immorality, impurity, passion, evil desire, and covetousness, which is idolatry." Idolatry, of course, is the idea of substituting, putting something in the place of God. Loving something more than you love God. And love of material possessions is at the essence of idolatry. We substitute things. We find our satisfaction in things rather than in God. That's what too much desire will do for you. Back in Luke chapter 12, one of my favorite parables. Luke chapter 12 talks about the parable of the rich fool. And Jesus tells them a parable in Luke chapter 12, starting in verse 16. The land of a rich man produced plentifully, and he thought to himself, "What shall I do, for I have nowhere to store my crops?" And he said, "I will do this. I will tear down my barns and build bigger ones, and there I will store all my grain and my goods, and I will say to my soul, 'Soul, you have ample goods laid up for many years. Relax, eat, drink, and be merry.' But God said to him, 'Fool, this night your soul is required of you, and the things you have prepared, whose will they be?' So is the one who lays up treasure for himself and is not rich toward God." The man's sin was not in being wealthy. The man's sin was not in being a good steward of his crops. The man's sin was not even in building bigger barns. There's nothing wrong with any of that. His problem was the trust that he put in his things. He was so covetous. Look at the language of the man as he speaks. "I will do this. My barns, my crops." The emphasis here is on self. His trust was not in God. His trust was in self and his capacity to secure all of these things. And so by desiring really too much, his problem is he becomes greedy and covetousness. It also manifests itself in a love of the world. In 1 John chapter 2, 1 John chapter 2, down in verse 15, "Do not love the world or the things in the world. If anyone loves the world, the love of the Father is not in him. For all that is in the world, the desires of the flesh, the desires of the eyes, and the pride of life, is not from the Father, but is from the world. And the world is passing away along with its desires, but whoever does the will of God abides forever." I'm reading there from the English Standard Version, and it uses the word desire several times, the desire of the eyes, the desire of the flesh. I prefer the older versions that say the lust of the eyes, the lust of the flesh. He says the lusts of this world are passing away. Desire in and of itself is a legitimate thing. Too much desire is what the Bible calls lust. Unbridled affection for things, unbridled desire for things. And that seems to be the problem here that John is addressing. We put our confidence in things. We desire anything at any cost. And John says that gets us into trouble and sends us down a dead-end road. Worry about things. Jesus said, I tell you, do not worry about your day-to-day necessities, he said in Matthew chapter 6. Trust in material things is another issue. Proverbs chapter 11, down in verse 28, whoever trusts in his riches will fall, but the righteous will flourish like a green leaf. So this is one extreme. This is what happens when you have too much desire. It leads to covetousness and greed and worry and just a materialistic attitude in general. So that is one version of contentment out of balance. But you can have the other problem as well, the opposite problem. You can have too little desire, a deficient desire. And that can lead to laziness. It can lead to dishonesty. It can lead to someone who talks all the time about his great and wonderful plans, and lo and behold, he never quite gets around to doing any of that. Look particularly in the book of Proverbs. Proverbs has a lot to say about this kind of person. He's generally described as the sluggard. But in Proverbs chapter 13, verse 4, the soul of the sluggard craves and gets nothing, while the soul of the diligent is richly supplied. The sluggard craves all the time. He wants things, but he's just too lazy to do anything about it. In a sense, he sort of has desire, but not enough desire to get him out of bed. Desire gets you out of bed most mornings. The desire to, pay the bills. The desire to, we want heat this winter. That kind of desire keeps you going, and that kind of desire is good. Here, the man doesn't have enough desire, not enough desire to get motivated. It can lead to dishonesty. Proverbs chapter 21. Proverbs 21, verse 6, the getting of treasures by a lying tongue is a fleeting vapor and a snare of death. For some people, they kind of want this, but they're not willing to work for it. They don't have enough desire to be disciplined and to get out and work for their possessions, so they'll take the shortcut and do the dishonest thing. Proverbs 15, verse 27, whoever is greedy for unjust gain troubles his own household, but he who hates bribes will live. And then finally, it can lead to a lot of nonsense and talk. Proverbs chapter 14, verse 23, in all toil there is profit, but mere talk tends only to poverty. You ever know someone who's just constantly talking about this project or that project? There's always a plan. There's always this thing that's out there. They're just waiting for that thing to come in. They're waiting for that thing to come and rock their world and change their life, and it amounts to nothing more than talk. They're not putting any plans in place. They're not investing their money. They're not investing their time or their skills. They're not doing anything. They're not actively pursuing any kind of steps that get them closer to that. And that's the kind of thing that Proverbs is talking about here. Someone who has desire but not really enough desire or discipline to follow through on anything. So I think you start with this concept of contentment as the median between two extremes. And the two extremes are way too much desire or way too little desire. Neither one of those things is good. And I think the Bible condemns both of them. So that brings up the question, how then do you find the balance? How do you find that golden mean, as Aristotle called it? I want to suggest there are several things that are connected with this. Number one, that is simply faith in God. Trusting that God will provide what we need, when we need it, how we need it, whatever proportions that we need, God will provide that. Jesus said in Matthew 6, verse 33, but seek first his kingdom and his righteousness, and all these things will be added to you. And I have to ask me this question a lot. Do I really believe that? Do I really believe that if my priority is living life in the kingdom of heaven, if my priority is glorifying God in everything that I do, do I truly believe that the Lord will provide what I need? That's a biggie for me. I think it's a biggie for a lot of people. I think that's an issue that a lot of us struggle with in this very materialistic culture of ours. Do we really believe that the Lord is going to provide us with the things that we need? If I don't believe that, then I'm probably going to be pursuing a materialistic lifestyle because I want this, I want that. And I'm just not convinced the Lord is going to give me everything that I want. And so it spurs us on, if we don't have the right thinking about this, it spurs us on toward that materialistic thinking. But I have to trust that the Lord will provide all things that I need. Go back again to the book of Proverbs. Proverbs chapter 3, you'd be wise to keep your finger tucked in Proverbs because we're going to jump back and forth quite a bit. But Proverbs chapter 3, for instance, in verse 9, honor the Lord with your wealth and with the first fruits of all your produce. Then your barns will be filled with plenty and your vats will be bursting with wine. His point is you trust the Lord, you honor Him, and you'll get the due reward that you should. Proverbs chapter 19. Proverbs chapter 19, verse 17. Whoever is generous to the poor lends to the Lord, and He will repay him for his deed. Over and over, the Bible simply says, trust God, He'll take care of the rest. Trust God, He will take care of the material things that you need. We also have to have diligence, and this answers to the issue of the sluggard. And Proverbs says, oh, so much about this. Proverbs chapter 10, for instance, Proverbs chapter 10, verse 4, a slack hand causes poverty, but the hand of the diligent, he says, makes rich. So we work hard, and if we work hard, generally we get the rewards of that. Proverbs chapter 12, Proverbs chapter 12, verse 27, whoever is slothful will not roast his game, but the diligent man will get precious wealth. He won't roast his game because he won't have any. If there's no diligence there, if there's no pursuit of the right course and working hard, he won't have anything, he won't have the adequate supply of food. Proverbs chapter 14, verse 4, where there are no oxen, the manger is clean, but abundant crops come by the strength of the ox. I love the first part of that. The picture is of a spotless manger, a spotless stable. There's no droppings on the floor. There's not dust everywhere. There's not mud everywhere. It doesn't smell like a cow. Oh, one thing. There's no cattle there. You got no cattle. You got no food. You got no income. You see, that's why my desk is in the condition that it's in. You know, I prefer to be messy. But the idea here is that sometimes when you work hard, you're going to make a mess. And that's okay because it reflects the hard work. It reflects the idea that you're busy being productive. Ephesians chapter 4, when Paul was speaking of the old man and the new man, notice the contrast that he makes. Ephesians 4 verse 28, let the thief no longer steal, but rather let him labor, doing honest work with his own hands, so that he may have something to share with anyone in need. A complete and total transformation of a person. At one time, he was willing to steal, whether it's talking about breaking in someplace and taking something that isn't his, whether he means by that someone who is negligent in his work and is, in an effective way, stealing from his employer. Doesn't matter. Let the thief steal no longer. But instead, he now works with his hand, and he produces things that are good. And not only does he work with his hands and have a good job and he gets a good paycheck, now he's willing and able to share what he has with others. So it's a complete transformation, and we become diligent when we are content. Also, we want to make sure that we're using our opportunities in the right way. Ephesians 5, while we're here, Ephesians chapter 5, down in verse 15 and 16, look carefully then how you walk, not as unwise, but as wise, making the best use of the time because the days are evil. Some translations say making the most of the opportunity. Whether he's talking about time or whether he's just talking about opportunity more generally, the idea here is that content people, godly people, are also diligent and opportunistic people. We try to take advantage of the opportunities that are before us. There's an interesting passage in 1 Corinthians chapter 7 that talks about opportunity. And I think it speaks very well to this concept of contentment. 1 Corinthians chapter 7 Now, 1 Corinthians 7 is dealing primarily with the issue of marriage and some of the problems that had crept into the marriages in the church in Corinth. But if you want to understand much of what Paul says, look at in the middle of the chapter, 1 Corinthians 7, down in verse 17, "Only let each person lead the life that the Lord has assigned to him and to which God has called him. This is my rule in all the churches. Was anyone at the time of his call already circumcised? Let him not seek to remove the marks of circumcision. Was anyone at the time of his call uncircumcised? Let him not seek circumcision." In other words, just remain as you are. Whatever condition you're in, be content with that. And he says in verse 19, "For neither circumcision counts for anything, nor uncircumcision, but keeping the commandments of God." Each one should remain in the condition in which he was called. Were you a bondservant when called? Do not be concerned about it. And then look at the parenthetic expression. But if you can gain your freedom, avail yourself of the opportunity. In other words, be satisfied with your condition, but if the opportunity arises where that condition can be better, that's okay too. There is this attitude that I'm okay right where I'm at, but I can also have the freedom to take advantage of the opportunities that come my way. So the contented person is not at odds with the idea of taking advantage of opportunities. The idea of generosity, I think, is also part of being content. When we're content, we try to be as generous as we can toward others. Go back to Proverbs again. Proverbs chapter 14. Proverbs chapter 14, verse 31 says, "Whoever oppresses a poor man insults his maker, but he who is generous to the needy honors him." Proverbs chapter 17, verse 5. Proverbs chapter 17, verse 5, "Whoever mocks the poor insults his maker. He who is glad at calamity will not go unpunished." A lot of times we are very judgmental toward people who don't have a lot. We can be very judgmental. I remember sitting in a Bible class one time. We were talking about the parables, and I think we were talking about just the idea of helping others as we have opportunity. And one older man spoke up, and he was pretty well off. I wouldn't say he was just wealthy, but he was very well off. And yes, he had been a very good steward of his blessings. But he said, "Well, suppose you have two men, and they live in the same town. They have basically the same size family. They work at the same place. And as time goes on, one of them winds up having a lot, and the other one doesn't have a lot." He said, "Doesn't that prove that one was a good steward and the other one wasn't?" I said, "No. There may be a lot of factors going on that we just don't understand." And his point was, "Well, if I've been a good steward, then why should I share something with someone who wasn't as good of a steward as me?" And first of all, the answer is, you're self-righteous. That's the first problem. You're judging others by your own standard. But here's another thing. Sometimes people need help. That's why. Sometimes, at the bottom line, somebody needs help. They're in a situation that is not of their own making, and compassion and generosity says, "I try to help." That's what God's people do. And so we need to look for these opportunities to be generous. Proverbs 11, verse 24, "One gives freely, yet grows all the richer. Another withholds what he should give and only suffers want. Whoever brings a blessing will be enriched, and the one who waters will himself be watered. The people curse him who holds back grain, but a blessing is on the head of him who sells it. Whoever diligently seeks good seeks favor, but evil comes to him who searches for it." And here again, the idea that we are generous, and being generous has its own set of rewards. And then the last thing I would add here as far as finding the balance is being good stewards of our possessions. Some of this is kind of implied by these other points already, but I do want to elaborate on this. If you've ever read much in the way of books written by so-called Christian financial experts, when they talk about stewardship, 9 times out of 10, they're talking about giving to the church. But stewardship is a much broader principle in the Bible. Stewardship is the idea that we have been entrusted with someone else's possessions, God's. We talked about that this morning. We have been entrusted with someone else's possessions, and so what do? Oh, here's a thought. We take good care of those possessions. Since they don't belong to me, And since at some point I give them back to their owner and give an accounting of the possessions that I have, then I need to take very good care of them. So stewardship involves a lot of different things. Stewardship allows for a lot of things. It allows for savings. Some people think, well, now, if I'm going to be generous and help others, I can't have anything saved up. I always have to live on the edge. I always have to live kind of with a zero balance in the bank. And that isn't true. For example, in Proverbs chapter 13 in verse 22, a good man leaves an inheritance to his children's children, but the sinner's wealth is laid up for the righteous. The first part of that, he says, having an inheritance to pass on to your children and your grandchildren, he said, that's a good thing. That's characteristic of the good, wise, thoughtful, prudent person. So the idea of being content and being a good steward is not at all opposed to the idea of saving money for a rainy day. Now, sometimes people save it and they start hoarding it. Now, saving and hoarding are two different things. You ever watch any of those hoarding shows on TV? You know what I'm talking about. Saving a newspaper to recycle is a good thing. Having millions of them in your living room and they topple on you and kill you, that's not a good thing. There's a difference between saving and hoarding. Hoarding is this idea that I don't feel secure without these possessions. And it is, again, a lack of trust ultimately in God and in His provision. So contentment and stewardship are not opposed to the idea of savings. I'm going to use this term asset management, probably not in the sense that most of us think of, but the idea of taking care of your possessions, whether it's money, whether it's things, whether it's crops, whether it's animals, or whatever else, we take good care of them. We have a sense of what we possess. We have a sense of their value and their importance. Over in the book of Proverbs again, Proverbs chapter 27. Proverbs 27, start in verse 23. Proverbs 27, verse 23. Know well the condition of your flocks and give attention to your herds. For riches do not last forever, and does a crown endure to all generations? When the grass is gone and the new growth appears and the vegetation of the mountains is gathered, the lambs will provide your clothing and the goats the price of a field. There will be enough goat's milk for your food, for the food of your household, and the maintenance for your girls. The idea here is that you watch over these because you understand if your flocks are successful, if your crops are successful, you're going to have a measure of success. Now, you can go to the opposite extreme and get obsessed with it. You can just spend all of your time, all of your energy, all of your money building up your business and forgetting about being generous. You forget about other things. You start putting your trust in them. His point is, if you have these assets, whether it's in... It's interesting that if you look at the parallelism in verse 23 and 24, know the condition of your flocks and herds, and then he uses the term riches. Riches we normally think of as money. We think of precious metals. We think of things like that. But here he says your livestock can be a form of wealth. So whatever form your wealth takes, whether it's a business that you own, whether it's machinery that helps you in your business, whether it's the people who work for you, whether it's the buildings that you own, the crops that you grow, or whatever else, know well their condition and take care of them. Asset management is consistent with stewardship, and it's consistent with the idea of contentment. Giving back to God. We talk about this every first day of the week. We take up a collection for the work of this local church. We're taking some of what God has given to us and giving it back to Him. 2 Corinthians 9, starting in verse 6. 2 Corinthians 9, verse 6. He says, the point is this, whoever sows sparingly will also reap sparingly, and whoever sows bountifully will also reap bountifully. Each one must give as he has decided in his heart, not reluctantly or under compulsion, for God loves a cheerful giver. And God is able to make all grace abound to you, so that having all sufficiency in all things at all times, you may abound in every good work, as it is written, He has distributed freely, He has given to the poor, His righteousness endures forever. He who supplies seed to the sower and bread for food will supply and multiply your seed for sowing and increase the harvest of your righteousness. You will be enriched in every way to be generous in every way, which through us will produce thanksgiving to God. So just in something as simple as giving to God, it's part of God's, if you will, it's part of His economy. It's how He takes care of rich and poor. It's how He takes care of the needs of others. And it assumes that we will be generous because of that. And then even in the area of debt, at some point we have to exercise some prudence. We have to exercise good stewardship, and we have to be content. Romans chapter 13, down in verse 6. The first paragraph in Romans 13 is actually talking about submission to the government. But and some of this depends on the translation that you're reading. But Romans 13, verse 7. Romans 13, verse 7, pay to all what is owed them. Taxes to whom taxes are owed. Now the ESV says revenue to whom revenue is owed. Respect to whom debt, respect is owed, and honor to whom honor. Some say debt to whom debt is owed. But the idea is whatever you owe someone, whether it's to the government, whether it's to some other person who's in a position of authority, say the bank, if you have a mortgage, you know what I'm talking about. But the idea is that whoever you owe something to, you pay that debt. You take care of that. Proverbs 22 touches on this briefly. Proverbs 22, verse 26, be not one of those who gives pledges, who put up security for debts. If you have nothing with which to pay, why should your bed be taken from under you? Kind of a comical image, but the point is, make sure you pay your debts. Now, there's some of these financial gurus sometimes suggest that all debt is somehow wrong or sinful. I don't think the Bible teaches that. In fact, under the law of Moses, there were times when you were required to help your fellow Israelite by loaning them the things that you needed. The debt itself wasn't the problem. It was the attitude about repayment. And again, it goes along with the idea of contentment. So when we think about contentment as the median between far too much desire and far too little desire, there's a proper way that we find that balance. And it's that list of things that we gave on the previous chart and on this one. Once we find the balance, how do we maintain it? And that is its own issue. Again, seek first His kingdom and His righteousness, and all of these things shall be added to you. That's how you maintain it. It's constantly keeping your attention, constantly casting your gaze upon things that are eternal. Jesus warned also in the Sermon on the Mount in Matthew chapter 6. Matthew chapter 6 in verse 24. Excuse me. Matthew 6 verse let me read two other passages. Matthew 6, look at verse 19. Do not lay up for yourselves treasures on earth, where moth and rust destroy and where thieves break in and steal, but lay up for yourselves treasures in heaven, where neither moth nor rust destroys and where thieves do not break in and steal. For where your treasure is, there will your heart be also. That's one good piece of advice about maintaining the balance. Always remember where your treasure is. It's not here on the earth. And when we put our trust in things that cannot last, we're fools. We're very foolish, and we've got our priorities in the wrong place. That's one bit of advice that Jesus gives us. Verse 24 was the other one I was thinking about. No man can serve two masters, for either he will hate the one and love the other, or he will be devoted to the one and despise the other. You cannot serve God and money, or you cannot serve God and mammon. Mammon is simply earthly wealth, earthly possessions, and you have to decide where your allegiance is. Always, we as the people of God put our trust in Him and not in the things of this earth. I wish I could give you a formula. I wish I had a formula because, boy, I need it sometimes. I wish that you could plug in your income and your debt and the percentage that you ought to give and what day of the week it is and how many days there are in the month and you push a few buttons and out comes, yes, buy the couch. No, don't buy that sweater. It would be very easy if you had a formula or a checklist. Unfortunately, there's not. I say unfortunately, that's how God intended. Contentment and stewardship, those are things that are taught to us in terms of principles. You know, someone says, well, how much should I give at church? Well, give as you've prospered. Yeah, but what percentage is that? He doesn't tell me a percentage. Give as you've prospered. I remember when I was a kid, we had this gorgeous peach tree in our backyard, provided us many, many, many years with many, many, many fresh peaches. One thing I didn't like about the peach, though, was my dad used it for disciplinary purposes. And every now and then, if I got in really bad trouble, and this happened like once maybe, but anyway, he would say, son, go get me a switch. That's like, go kill yourself, you know? But you know what I never did to my dad? Well, dad, exactly what do you mean by a switch? You know, how long should it be? What's the diameter of this thing? Tell me, describe how flexible you want this thing. He gave me a principle, and he gave me an assignment and said, go do the right thing. And I always picked the right one. Much to my pain, much to my embarrassment, I always picked the right switch because I knew if I did the wrong thing, it'd be even worse. I didn't want him picking it. Well, the same thing is true when it comes to things like contentment and things like desire and things like materialism. We're not given a formula. We're not given a precise checklist. We're not given a dollar amount. What we're given are some principles. And what the Lord expects us to do is pick the right size switch. He expects us to take these principles and reasonably and responsibly apply them in the right way. Someone has said very wisely, riches to us are no menace if we do not divorce dollars from cents. And I think that's our problem sometimes. We get in way over our heads. Our desires get the best of us. And as a consequence, sometimes we just don't do the right thing. But if we'll keep these principles in mind, always strive for that balance between too much desire and too little desire, I think answering the question about the new couch gets a whole lot easier. We need to control our desires. That's what we can control. We need to be good stewards of our possession. We can control that. Now, we can't always control the emergencies. We can't always control the bad things that happen that wreck the monthly budget. That happens. We got to get used to that. But what we can control is our desire and the way in which we use our possessions. We can control our attitudes toward the things that we possess. And in doing that, it puts us much, much closer to this very happy place called contentment. Now, whenever we think about contentment, one of the things that always strikes me is God is interested in every single detail of my life, yes, including my purchases. That sometimes gets very annoying. Sometimes it's like, why are you so interested in that stuff? And it's because he's my Lord. He is the creator of heaven and earth, and he knows what is best for me. And what I have to do is just turn it over to him and live in the way that he wants me to live. Is that what you're doing in your life? Have you turned everything over to the Lord? Are you trusting him? Are you doing his will? If not, you need to make the corrections. If we can help you in any way tonight, we would invite you to come forward while we stand and sing.